Welcome to the Catholic Bible Pod with Mon. I'm Monica, your host, and I am so excited you're joining me. Each week here on the pod, we open the Bible, we talk about prayer, we explore what the Catholic Church teaches. For me, getting familiar with God's Word transformed my relationship with Him, and I want that for you too. I want you to be comfortable in the Word. I want you to be familiar with it, confident, Bible literate. I am here to help you one week at a time. Let's dive in. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to our final episode. Am I right, Katie?
Yes, the last one.
I can't believe it. Lent has felt short.
Yes, actually, yeah. Yes.
First year, I think I'm saying that.
And as a mom, it changes. Everything goes faster.
I think it's already Tuesday again. What's happening to me? But we're here. It's Holy Week.
Yes.
The week of the bridegroom is the name we're going to be using. And we're going to cover chapter 8. And then we're actually going to talk about Holy Week a little bit more, too. Get into some specifics, some ideas, because, like, Easter is, like, less than a week away. Mm-hmm. And sometimes this week can be a little bit, I know I use the word intimidating, I feel like, a lot, where I'm like, oh, it's intimidating to get into. But it's like, ah, oh, this sober week that we have to do all these obligations. But we want to introduce this as, like, of course, a week of love.
Yes.
Just like Lent has been a season of love and romance and stuff. So, such fun. Any thoughts before we jump in tonight, Katie?
No, I'm ready.
You're ready. Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Katie also dug up a great resource for us for the second half of this.
Thanks, Dad.
Shout out, Mr. Schechter. No, wait. Mr. Rodin.
Yes, Mr. Rodin.
Wait, what's your maiden name?
Mr. Schechter's not my dad.
Okay, let's read. Let's get into it.
All right, chapter 8. Would that you were a brother to me, nursed at my mother's breast. If I met you out of doors, I would kiss you, and no one would despise me. I would lead you, bring you to my mother's house, where you would teach me, where I would give you to drink spiced wine, my pomegranate juice. His left hand is under my head, and his right arm embraces me. I adjure you, daughters of Jerusalem, do not awaken or stir up love until it's ready. Who is this coming up from the desert, leaning upon her lover? Beneath the apple tree I awakened you. There your mother conceived you. There she who bore you conceived. Set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm. For love is strong as death. Longing is fierce as Sheol. Its arrows are arrows of fire, flames of the divine.
Deep waters cannot quench love, nor rivers sweep it away. Were one to offer all the wealth of his house for love, he would be utterly despised. We have a little sister. She has no breasts as yet. What shall we do for our sister on the day she is spoken for? If she is a wall, we will build up for her a silver turret. But if she is a door, we will board her up with cedar planks. I am a wall, and my breasts are towers. I became in his eyes as one who brings peace. Solomon had a vineyard at Baal Hamon. He gave over the vineyard to caretakers. For its fruit, one would have to pay 1,000 silver pieces. My vineyard is at my own disposal. The 1,000 pieces are for you, Solomon, and the 200 for the caretakers of its fruit. You who dwell in the gardens, my companions are listening for your voice. Let me hear it. Swiftly, my lover, be like a gazelle or a young stag upon the mountain of spices. Okay. This, I mean, more than most, strikes me as like, wow, weird.
Yes, like, I would agree.
There's some weird stuff.
Yes.
But never fear, the cantata is here.
That's a good line. I'm surprised that's the first time we've used that.
What? In the last episode? Come on. And not just the cantata, but whatever else we're pulling from the other piece of book. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
Okay. So actually, do you want to start with that? Do you want to start with the fact that there's this weird thing going on in chapter 8?
Yeah.
About the writing of this.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because it's the middle.
I know.
Of
it is weird.
Verse 7.
Halfway through.
I'm like, whoever broke up the Song of Songs just did it in a weird way.
For sure.
But it says, deep waters cannot quench love, nor rivers sweep it away. And so a lot of theologians say that is actually where the Song of Song ends, and the next part is kind of like an appendix that was added on later.
Yeah.
So it still could have been the same writer, but it's in a different tone. Like, the cantata says it has a tone almost from, like, wisdom.
Yeah.
The Book of Wisdom.
Yeah, it does. It sounds not as poetic. It sounds more proverby.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's just a change.
Mm-hmm.
The cantata actually, let me pull it up.
Yeah, find that quote.
Says it, because it explains it, because it's like, it stops commenting, which is why we had to find another resource.
Right, it ends, the cantata ends at the halfway of verse 7.
Yes, so it says, these two passages were attached only secondarily to the song, but it still was before Jesus. So yes. It wasn't like,
yeah,
we didn't add this to the Old Testament
as
Catholics.
Yeah, it did in 1935.
Vatican II, we decided.
Oh, no.
And also the last two editions of verse 7, quite beautiful in themselves. Love cannot be bought. It's priceless. These two editions contrast with what precedes them and are not connected with what follows. Therefore, they cannot have had the same author as the song, or at least have been written by him at the same time.
Yep.
So they still have value.
But oh, totally.
It does make sense when you're thinking about it of, like, this deep romance kind of ends at this, like, climax, and then it kind of goes into this, like, almost random.
Yeah.
But now that we've studied it more, we're like, okay, no, this is really beautiful.
Right. It's satisfying. It's beautiful. Yes. It adds to it. But yeah, on initial thought, it's like, it should end at deep waters cannot quench this love.
Yes.
This is the end. And then it's like, by the way, let's talk about a little sister.
Yes.
Like, wait, no. Why are we talking about? Yeah, so it could be the same author, but it, not at the same time. It's like mm-hmm. he returned later to write it. And yeah, all of it is in the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation, which was written in around, 200 years before mm-hmm. the time of Jesus, maybe a little bit less when Greece was, taking over the promised land and the chosen people. So it's like, it's not that it's illegitimate. It's just different than everything, and it should be chapter 9.
Yes,
but it's not, so
they could have made it chapter 9
and then they could have dealt with it differently and been like, all right, chapter 9 is a little different than the rest. But anyways, here we are halfway through chapter 8. Is just a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
and with that comes more translations and more options for how it can be translated, which I know we've said multiple times, but like, you have to be comfortable in the song with one thing meaning multiple different things.
Yeah.
Because it's poetry. And so that's just how it goes. Even if I'm like, what does it actually mean? Like, which one is it?
Yes.
So, okay, cool. Thanks for explaining that. That's awesome. Okay, let's go backtrack and go start at verse 1.
Yeah, start at verse 1.
Okay, what do you want to do?
Okay, so would that you were a brother to me, nursed at my mother's breast. You might be like, whoa, that's kind of weird.
For sure. Wait, lovers, just two brothers.
but it's actually beautiful because she's saying, she's realized like, you are divine, I'm human, I want to be of the same flesh.
Yeah.
So that's hinting back to the incarnation, which is kind of what is happening in verse 1 and verse 2.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I would lead you and bring you to my mother's house is where verse 2 goes to.
Uh-huh.
And where you would teach me. And that's like Jesus teaching in the temple, or teaching in the mountain, or not the mountains, the mounts.
yes.
So it's the word became flesh and dwelt among us is kind of what we're seeing in verses 1 and 2.
Yep. It's the lowliness of the incarnation. And we've talked about it before, like he goes down to his garden, but how he lowers himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Hebrews 12, we do not have a great high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness, but rather one who has been tested and tried in every way, like who he's able to have compassion on us and empathize with us. And, like, he is our brother.
Yeah.
And it's true to say Jesus is my lover and my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it's not cool to do that with human relationships, but this is not the same thing. So it can play by different rules. And yeah, just to emphasize what you were saying, I think that it's, the cantata said it so beautifully, like, she's close to him in marriage, as close as possible. And she's like, I actually want to be one, like, from the same place. I want to be of the same thing. There's a closeness in siblings that you don't get with your spouse. You're like, oh, there's this whole part of my childhood that she wants more even, which I don't know. I'm like, wow, that's so crazy to think about wanting more than marriage. But that he does. He shares more than marriage with her, but he shares it through humanity and the incarnation.
Yeah.
And then there's this interesting point too, that if I met you out of doors, I would kiss you and none would despise me. It's okay and allowed to kiss your family relation, your brother.
Yeah.
But it's PDA you can't actually kiss your spouse in public at this time period, I guess. And so she wants to be able to show acts of affection.
Yeah.
And show her love. And she's like, I wish you were my brother so I could do that.
Yes.
Isn't that cute?
Which also, so You saying this brought up an interesting idea in my mind of the fact that he has already called her his sister
He has.
in
You're
this
right.
poem, actually.
Is this the first time she's calling him brother?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah.
So it's like
She's finally reciprocating that
she's
part.
finally like under, I think she's finally like maybe understanding it.
Sure, sure, sure,
She
sure.
might have been like, oh, sister.
She's like, I don't want to be your sister. No,
Like,
no.
yeah, or like just not fully comprehending like what he's saying. And now she's like, oh,
Yeah.
yes, I do want this type of relationship too.
Because actually it's just sharing. It's
Yes.
more, it's deeper. Yeah, she's not reducing. That's the opposite of what she's doing right here. She's not saying, I want you to be further away from me, be my brother. She's saying, I want you to be my lover and my brother.
Yeah, but
Yeah.
he like offers that relationship first
Yeah.
to her.
That is interesting. He did say sister, and she didn't really pick up on that or like
Yeah.
respond to that specifically.
Wow, that's
How interesting.
cool.
There's all these calls and responses, huh? They really are paying attention to what the other person's talking
Yeah,
about.
that's awesome.
Okay, verse 2 as well, where you would
Yeah.
teach me. There's that Mary of Bethany imagery sitting at the foot of Jesus
Ah, yes.
listening. So it's like, I don't know, we've talked about before on the pod, like the difference between the rabbi teacher Jesus and the bridegroom lover Jesus. But it's like here he's merging, the author is merging them, that actually you're my lover and you're my teacher. You know, like,
Yes.
and there's this quote from DeSales, Francis, of course, we love him, says, love is the abbreviated version of theology.
Yes.
And it's like to learn only takes you so far. St. Thomas Aquinas, I think, says love takes up where knowledge leaves off, something like that. It's like you can learn and learn and learn, but the learning turns into love because it's the love is like, oh, I can't even know. Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, I just
That's
love that
good.
teaching is there because that is how I love. I'm like, I love Jesus the teacher,
Yes.
and he's also Jesus the bridegroom, but the bridegroom loves the teacher. Look at
Yes.
that. Good.
And then as verse 2 continues, she talks about she wants to give him the spiced wine, my pomegranate juice.
Yes.
She's kind of like realizing like, oh, this is like my heart that I want to give you. And kind of just how the closer you get, like the deeper you go with Jesus, you find new things to give to him.
Yes. Okay, wait, say that differently because that's a really interesting point, I thought.
Yeah.
Would you draw that out a little bit
I
more?
know. Let me see. So,
Let me see. What do I got in this brain?
what's in here? So I was listening to a talk that we might reference later by Father Patrick Schultz,
Oh, yes.
and he was explaining how when you first meet like someone, like he's talking about specifically your spouse, like when you first start going on dates, like you're starting to just become more vulnerable every single time, and then you're just like, I want to give you more of myself.
Yeah.
I want to give you more, like, and then you get married and you're like, oh, but there's still more of me to give. Because you're
Yeah.
like, oh no, now we're married, like everything's great. And you're like, oh, like I know now I found out I have this to give you.
Yeah, it's
Or
like
like
as
this
you
part of my heart I
discover.
want to give you.
Yes.
Or like I didn't know that I had this part. Or I've also thought of it of like all these different rooms. Like my home, my heart is a house. And there's different times where Jesus will be like, let's go visit this room.
Wow, it's like deeper access
Yeah.
into your
And
heart.
I'm like, I don't know. Or sometimes I have this image a lot where we are sitting at a dining table and he brings up this file cabinet
Whoa.
and he's like, do you want to go through this? It's always
Whoa.
an invitation. And sometimes I do say no. I'm like, I'm not ready.
Like hard pass.
Yeah, hard pass on those memories. But yeah, it's like that invitation of like, okay, here's like a way that we can go deeper and be in greater union together.
Yeah.
But will you let me go to these places with you?
Yeah.
And so yeah, the deeper I go with him, the more that I realize that I have more.
Yeah, but it's not that you weren't willing to give it up before. It's that you didn't
Yes.
actually know you
I
had it to
didn't know.
give.
Yes.
Yeah, I find that to me, this really relates in my study of the Bible. I grew up Catholic. I feel like I've loved the Lord for a long time, besides falling out of the church for a little bit, but you know, that's a whole nother thing. But the learning the Bible again, like starting in 2022 when I was teaching it, has given me head knowledge that has like it cannot help but turn into heart knowledge where I'm like, oh, I didn't know. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a specific example of something that I discovered. I guess like recently, I guess I've been really learning more about like the covenant, the new covenant of Jesus and how it relates to all the old covenants. And like maybe this is so basic, but I didn't put this together, that like the way by which we do covenant, the way by which Jesus set up covenant, is through the Mass and through the Eucharist. And so just like Abraham and Isaac had to get circumcised, and just like the Ten Commandments were for the people of Moses, and just like it's the thing that God chose to accompany his covenant, the way by which we do it. And so at Mass, there's this part of me that maybe is like, I'm bored, or I want to be distracted, or I'm a little tired, or whatever, that is like, now that you know that this is like covenant, this is what God came here to do, this isn't just the your duty to God, but it's covenant, and you know what covenant means because you've read about every single one of these covenants, and you know that these covenants have been broken, and you know that you've broken this covenant, but you can get back to confession. Like, the knowledge has made me want to surrender more to him.
Yeah.
It's like taken me a step further. Like, the knowledge, love is the abbreviated version of theology. I was like, oh, I can't even, like, the learning it has helped me to say, oh, I love you more. It's drawn me closer.
Yes.
And, like, I don't know why the cantata or whatever the song calls this spiced wine and pomegranate juice. I think that's a little bit funny, but, like, that's what this represents. Where when she learns from him, he teaches her. When she learns, oh, I have more to give, she gives it.
Yes.
It's almost like, he says to her, by the way, you have spiced wine in your fridge. And she's like, oh, let me go get it for you. Like, but she didn't actually know she had it. And now she just, her heart is so ready to give it. So again, the maturing of her love, she's not totally there because she's still learning. And every time I don't think we're ever going to reach a point where we totally get it. We're still learning, even like on our deathbed. But when we learn, we draw closer to him, and then we can give more of ourselves to him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Another example I would say is, I always have this desire to pray more during my day.
Yeah.
Or like be closer to Jesus during my day. And then there's just these like little epiphany moments where it's like, he's like, okay, when you're doing these dishes, you can be giving this to me.
Sure.
Like these places where I'm like holding this like victim mindset of like, why am I doing this? Why am I the only one that has to do this? Blah, 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 blah. He's like, you can give this to, like, it's like, I didn't even think of like, oh, I can give this to you.
Right. But now this that you know, now you have spiced wine.
Yes.
And you're like, take my spiced wine.
Yeah, I have something else to give that I would never have thought of.
It's beautiful. It's, there is, it's not just to know things that we study things and we learn things. It's to love greater.
Yeah.
So I love it. If you're learning theology does not inspire you to love of God, I would suggest you try a different way to learn theology.
Yes.
Because it should be inspiring you to love of God. Yeah.
Okay, and then we go back to his left hand under my head.
We've been here before.
And his right arm embraces me. So we have the feminine and the masculine. The feminine of the baby being held by his mother.
Yes. Daughter and bride.
Yeah.
So and now we've had sister, daughter, bride all in this one section, just saying.
Yes.
So,
and then being protected.
There you go.
With the right arm.
Love.
Yes.
And then he says his line again. I adjure you, daughters of Jerusalem, do not awaken or stir up love till it's ready. Which is interesting because it is ready.
Yes.
Because he went down to the nut garden a couple weeks ago and he checked.
Yeah.
And she was last verse, chapter 7 was like, let's go down together and let's check.
Mm-hmm.
So Cantata at least says this sleep is different.
Yes.
This sleep, when she wakes up from her sleep, she's under an apple tree. She's under the apple tree of paradise. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, Katie. Does she die? This is her death. Or am I wrong?
I didn't think so.
Okay. My understanding. Oh, wait. This is great. Let's talk this out because I thought she's perfectly abandoned to God.
Yes.
It seemed like this beneath this apple tree is the apple tree of paradise.
Yeah. And,
So where else would she be? And maybe even, I don't know. My impression was that the original ending, we'll call it the original ending, verse 7. It's just a happy ending. It's like, I'm awake. We're together.
Yeah.
Nothing is... Woo, we're together. Like, set me as a seal on your arm. And the end. But then it kind of feels like maybe she is not dead because this whole other part where she's talking about things. But this piece of it feels like she's woken up and now she's under the apple tree of paradise.
Yeah.
And furthering that point, which again, let's see if I'm, I don't know, this is just my thought here, in verse 5, who is this coming up from the desert leaning upon her lover? This is what the chorus sings about her.
Yeah.
We've seen them say, who is this? The bridegroom.
Yes.
We've seen, who is this? The rising star, the bride. And now it's them united.
Mm-hmm.
And she's coming up from this desert of betrothal to death, to paradise, right? Okay,
yes.
But tell me what you're thinking about this. Or
no,
maybe or what I missed in the cantata.
That is amazing. Well, I think the only reason why I was like, oh, she's not dead, because we have this like appendix part.
Oh, yes, right, because she's totally alive at the appendix.
But then I'm like, I don't know, maybe this is different. So I totally see what you're saying.
Maybe one way to take it is that she
Yeah,
died.
one way to take it is that she died. Either that she is in heaven or this is ecstasy of prayer.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. That would be another reasonable, because otherwise it's like, why is she asleep again? Because every time she's fallen asleep so far, it's because the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak and she can't stay awake. But here it's like she's perfectly abandoned to God. It feels like there's no reason for her to sleep unless it's ecstasy. That's interesting.
So it could be. I think you could take it either way.
Okay, cool. Okay, cool. Okay, so what else are you thinking about in this
Okay, so
passage?
who is this coming up from the desert? There's a
Yep.
quote from the Cantata
Yep.
that says, "One cannot attain the consummated wedding with the Lamb without a long preliminary novitiate endlessly renewed in the desert with him."
Oof. I
Yeah,
mean, that was chapter five,
just sit
right?
with that
He
one.
left her, yeah.
Yeah, of like the desert is so necessary.
Yeah.
And just like the mercy of God, like you brought up Hebrews of like he can sympathize with our weaknesses.
Yeah.
Like he did that. He went into the desert
Yeah.
for 40 days.
He felt the hunger.
So then he could be prepared to like do his mission.
And
But
furthermore, Israel did that, okay, 40 years, and Paul did that 3 years before his ministry.
So it's like you can't bypass the desert.
Yeah,
It's
yeah.
it like there's so much gold that can be found in the desert. And it's where we're going to be purified and where we're ultimately going to be able to be with Jesus.
And I think that's Lent. That's literally what we're ending. We just did it. You just did it. If you're like, what, the desert? It's like the desert sometimes is a season God imposes on you, if that's the right way to say that. But the desert is also something the church asks you to go back into every year because it's important enough, because it's the, what did you call it? Novitiate?
The novitiate.
I mean, wow, that's a different way of thinking about it. The novitiate is, correct me if I'm wrong, is you have to pass through the novitiate in order to take your final vows to be a religious. So you have to, it's you learning and being taught and being formed in the way. Yeah, so the suffering is the novitiate. I'm like, what? Take up your cross and follow me, baby.
But talk to us about the apple tree.
Okay, well, really, that's all I had. I know that the apple tree, she says that he's like the apple tree, which is a foreign tree, but the cantata said this isn't the same reference, because in that one she said he's like an apple tree, but in this one it's like the apple tree, as if we know which apple tree she's talking about. And so the apple tree in reference to like the tree of eternal life, in the garden. And there your mother conceived you, there she who bore you conceived. I guess it's a picture of Eve. So we're thinking about Eden, we're thinking again paradise. Yeah.
Yeah, I have the quote from the cantata on it was, "It is at the foot of the apple tree that you became my bride. There I gave you my hand and you were reestablished at the very spot where your mother had suffered violence." And that was Saint John of the Cross. It's going back to like the full restoration
Yeah.
of the bride, of like the apple tree is where you were separated from me, and now the apple tree is where.
Wow, so the apple tree, not the tree of life, the apple tree being the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, where violence happened to Eve in that she was ripped away from God. Wow, and so here she is beneath the apple tree. It's almost like, to me, the apple tree represents a choice. You know, beneath the apple tree, where you could choose to disobey me or not, the tree of covenant, the tree, you know, part of God's covenant with Adam was don't eat this. You know, so it's just interesting that it's here, because she enjoyed his fruit before because her breath was like apples. So anyways, it's just, there's a lot of tie-ins, you know.
And then the other thing, so he said, "I adjure you, daughters of Jerusalem, do not awaken or stir up love
Yep.
until it's ready." And he awakens her
Yeah, he does.
because he knows that she's ready.
Oh, wait, that's cool. That's really cool. So he's like, let me tell you, let me follow my example. Don't do it until it's ready.
She's
It's
ready.
ready, because I'm gonna awaken her. Okay,
She's ready to receive
that
it.
is more edifying, because you're like, wait, this whole time it feels like she's finally ready, but then she fell asleep. So okay, but then here's the bride responding. I think that the bride begins to speak here.
Yeah, it set me as a seal.
Yeah, set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm. So this is maybe another reason that maybe she has not died and is not in paradise. Okay, because the cantata says she here is conscious of her weakness and she's reaching out yet again for a desire to have permanence and to have stability. She wants to be on the heart of her beloved. The idea, the imagery of a seal is like something that's constantly with the person. A seal upon your heart is one that's hung around the neck. Am I right?
Yeah, it's a signet ring
Signet
where
ring.
they would like that was like your signature that you would put you on would things.
Press into wax.
Yeah, it was like a stamp.
Okay. So she wants to be like, you know, John the Beloved imagery on the heart of her beloved, mm-hmm. but like it's like a signet ring on his. She wants to always be with him, and she wants the permanence of keep me with you, because if you depart from me, I don't know, is that the right implication? Keep me with you because I don't want you to be away from me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She like wants to have like the same identity and the same name. So like what he, they have to do everything together basically.
Okay, yes.
If she is a signet ring. Because
oh, yes.
he has to sign everything with her.
Yes. Okay, wait. So there's nothing she can do apart from him.
Yes.
Because when you look at her, you see him.
Him, yes.
His name is on her. Yes. Okay, wait. I love this idea because if you follow this, it's like, okay, if Katie is Jesus's signet ring, then whenever Katie does the dishes, mm-hmm. God's seal is on those dishes.
Yes.
Because Katie's on those dishes. Yes. You know, it's like, and then evangelizing isn't this task we have to go do. It is where I go, I bring Jesus. I am the Theotokos. I bear him. Because I'm a signet ring and I touch whatever he touches. I don't know. It's like there's this togetherness.
Which is very much what Genesis, like in the garden, was supposed to be.
Interesting.
Let's create together.
Yeah.
Let's walk together. Let's like populate this earth and
dominion.
Grow things and have this dominion
together. Yeah. It wasn't ever supposed to be us trying to find each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was this quote from Cantata that talked about Teresa of Avila. And how she, her name, I guess Jesus appeared to her as a small child in her convent. And she said, what's your name? And she is Teresa of Jesus. And he says, Jesus of Teresa.
Yeah.
I thought, oh my gosh. It's like his name, he took the name and he put her name on.
Yes.
To share that togetherness. I'm like, wow. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
I'm also
whoa,
like,
whoa,
wow,
whoa.
She caught that.
I know.
I feel like I would have been like, that was weird.
Right.
That was like, weird.
What?
But I guess if Jesus is appearing too, you're probably just at like
I was gonna say,
a different
you're in
spot.
That Venice mansion, baby. You understand.
You know what's going on.
Yes. Okay, so the next thing, for love is as mm-hmm. strong as death, longing is fierce as Sheol. Its arrows are arrows of fire, flames of the divine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hit us with this, Katie.
So I really have just like the last, the flames of the divine is also Yahweh is in other translations.
Yep. Of the divine could be Yahweh. Yep.
Flames of Yahweh. So it's like the first time God is mentioned in the Song of Songs. So it's kind of like in this ending of what the bride is saying is she's finally revealing that my bridegroom
is
God.
Yes. It's like only at the very end does she actually say his name.
Yes.
She's been calling him my lover, my friend, and it's like, God.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really natural ending point, I will say.
I know.
Except
I
for
know.
That it's not, but anyways. Yeah, Zechariah 2:9, prophecy, I will be a wall of fire around her. It references backwards to the, you know, the wall, the pillar of fire that guided the Israelites in the desert. But here it is again, flames of the divine.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see, you know, flames of the divine at Pentecost, Holy Spirit. God is the burning bush, you know, like the fire is a representation of God. And so mm-hmm. the fire here, arrows of fire, flames of the divine, it just feels like it's very intertwined all throughout scripture, right?
Yes.
But on one hand, she talks about fire and then she switches gears and talks about water. So I like this because it's like, it's both. It's fire and water. She's basically demonstrating the strength of God's love. And it gives you that imagery of Romans 8, like nothing, nothing, heights nor depths nor anything. I should know it. Nothing will take you away from my love. Nothing can separate it. So deep waters cannot quench love. Rivers cannot sweep it away. In Hebrew culture, water represented chaos, anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, the Gentiles were the water and the land was the chosen people because like God made the water at first at creation and it was like chaotic and dangerous. And then he pulled out of it the dry land. So first he made the, you know, I guess out of the Gentile people, he pulled his chosen people. Okay, that's the idea. So like in Revelation, we got the beast of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
When you see sea, you should see, oh, chaos, danger. You know, so here she says deep waters. She's talking about like chaos cannot quench love. Anxiety cannot quench this mm-hmm. love. Fear cannot quench this love. Nothing can quench it.
Yeah. And Francis of Sales has...
Oh, I wrote this down too. Good,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. It says... Far from extinguishing love, trials can only and paradoxically stoke it. So the waters and tribulations and the floods of persecution cannot drown out love, Moreover, not only does it not die, but love grows richer in poverty. Which, just him talking about this, brings me to the Beatitudes.
Oh, wow. Blessed are the poor.
Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who are persecuted.
Yeah.
Blessed are those who mourn.
Because the deep waters somehow are actually
fortifying
the love.
Because they purify the love.
Yeah. And it makes me think of, oh, come north wind blow in my garden. That north wind of desolation suffering. Yeah. Like, deep waters, strong cold wind, nothing can take away my love, because suffering actually can enhance my love of God.
Yes.
More than consolation can.
Yeah, because you can realize how poor in spirit you are.
Yeah.
Which makes you realize how much more
you need him.
You need God.
Reach out for him.
Yes.
You're not like built up on this, I'm awesome.
Yes.
That heresy.
I can do anything.
There's also the imagery of the Matthew 7, the wise man built his house on a rock.
And yeah.
The winds blew and the flood came, but
Matthew built his house on sand and it went away.
And it fell, but he, the
rich, but on the rock.
Then it stayed.
Yes.
I can't. I'm like having a hard time with my words. I'm like, yes, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He's safe because he's with the Lord, so the deep waters can't get him. Yeah. Yeah, I just think that's a declaration for my own life. Like, fear cannot quench his love. Or, like, my own deficiencies cannot quench his love. Nothing can quench his love. Like,
yeah.
And she's obviously talking about God's love for her, but, like, she can also say it too. Yeah, nothing can quench my love for you, God, hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay, now we get to the transition, the weird part. I should stop calling it weird. Yeah. It is scripture. It's the Lord's
word. The appendix.
Yes, thank you. The appendix.
It's still the word of God.
So this amazing resource that Katie, you found.
Yes, it's called Song of Songs, A Mystical Exposition.
Beautiful.
It's written by a Spanish priest.
Was Teresa of Avila's.
Well, it wasn't Teresa of Avila's
spiritual
director. But a lot of the commentary that we are reading from these verses, it's Father Gratian, if I'm saying it right.
Okay, probably. It's
Spanish, so maybe there's a different accent to it. But he was St. Teresa of Avila's spiritual director.
Okay, so this guy, the author of this, is quoting.
Yeah, okay, so he quotes, it's similar to Cantata, where like the author of the book, I'm like, does he ever, I guess sometimes he talks. Because other parts are written.
Right.
He doesn't just like quote everybody else.
Right.
But it's similar of like just quoting mystics.
Yeah.
As He's much as possible.
Together. Yeah, because Cantata is not the only commentary out there. There's tons of commentaries on the Song of Songs. So, of course, there are others. But, yeah, we pivoted to another because Cantata ended here. But, I loved reading this because this, I mean, Katie and I were talking about this before we started recording. This gives a really satisfying end because if you just Google, you know, and be careful with Googling because, you know, Song of Songs is generally differently translated between Christian and Catholic understandings of it. And so, you know, there is a wealth of information out there about the Song of Songs, but if you're looking for a Catholic perspective on it, there's not a wealth of information. So anyways, I was like looking at the USCCB footnotes and getting lots of different answers in this commentary. So again, we can be comfortable with different options and different ways to see things.
Yeah.
But I was really edified by this work. So we're excited to share
from
this. So here it starts halfway through verse 7. Were one to offer all the wealth of his house for love, he would be utterly despised. We're going to kind of skip that line and we're going to go to the little sister. Is that right? Okay. I'm like, all right, cool. We have a little sister. And it's like, who is speaking?
Yeah.
And different translations say different things. One translation harkens back to the brothers that she mentions in chapter 1, where it's like the brothers who made me work in my vineyard. And so it's like, are they speaking about her? But there's a cooler one that Katie, go for that one.
We like this one.
Yes.
Or it's edifying to her spiritual life. So it's the idea of the person who is saying this is the bride of Christ. So, like, the bride of Christ that has been brought to maturity.
Yep.
She has a desire for all of the other potential brides of Christ to be brought to maturity, too. So she's like, okay, Lord, like, I'm so glad we're in this spot, but I have this longing for, like, my sister to be here, too.
Yeah.
For all my other sisters to join you.
Yeah.
So she's saying, what shall we do? And so in this interpretation of it, it's Christ is the one who comes in and he says, the bridegroom.
Yep.
If she is a wall, we will build upon her a silver turret. But if she is a door, we will board her up with cedar planks. The translation that the Mystical Exposition was using, which I believe was Dewey Rheims, is let us adorn it with planks of cedar,
which is totally different.
Very different than board her up. Adorn her, board her up.
Board her up, adorn her. But then when I was reading mine, I have the Nabre. So I think this is the NAB on your notes.
Okay.
I have the revised edition of the NAB. But it says, we will reinforce it with a cedar plank, which I was like, that actually kind of makes more sense with the let us adorn it. So let me break it down.
Yes.
If she is a wall. So a wall refers to someone who has the responsibility of directing and governing. So her little sister is someone who is not yet matured in the faith.
Thus, but, no breasts.
Yes, no breasts yet. So she's saying, so Christ is saying, sorry, I shouldn't say Christ. I should say bridegroom.
Bridegroom.
The bridegroom is saying, if she's given the responsibility of directing and governing people, then we will build upon her a silver turret, which is in reference to scriptural doctrine.
Okay. We'll build her up.
Well, we're going to build her up.
With doctrine.
With doctrine. So then she has doctrine to give people.
Awesome.
But if she is a door, and this was in reference to if she lives in contact with the world.
Okay.
Then let us adorn her, adorn it with planks of cedar, or reinforce her with planks of cedar, which would be reference to virtues.
Yeah, that's really interesting. If she's a wall and she is in charge of people, let's give her doctrine.
Yeah.
And if she's a door and she is in the world, let's give her virtue.
Yes.
That's so fascinating that we, you know, depending on our station in life, we need different tools.
Yes.
To what? Reach maturity.
Mm-hmm.
If we're immature, it doesn't actually disqualify us from doing the work of the Lord. It just means we need different things.
Yeah. And what that's I love is how it says we will or let us in the other transition, because it's saying God and the bride. So it's kind of like, how good is it for us to have someone to be obedient to?
Mm.
For us to have someone who's walking with us? And I know, I just in my own search, that it's really hard to find a spiritual director.
Yeah.
But just that encouragement of, if it's not a spiritual director, if you can find like an elderly woman at the parish.
A mentor, somebody.
A mentor, and be like, they do not need to be perfect.
Yeah.
But to have someone who you can ask questions to. And be like, you've been walking this journey for so much longer than I have.
It's like, she'll be the bride and you can be the little sister.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like, help mature me.
And in the same sense, to have a little sister who you can help mentor or direct or whatever. Yeah, there really is beauty in, there's kind of that model, I feel like, in ministry and in the church. It's like, always have somebody a season before you and a season behind you in order to kind of like, I don't know, in Damascus language, walk with.
Yeah.
But it's like to mentor, to guide, to whatever. But I just love the us, the we, because it's also, I mean, just we're just talking about signet rings. It's like, it's really the bridegroom. The bridegroom is the one who brought the bride to maturity. Mm-hmm. She did not have an older sister. But now look, she is from the fruit of her love, just like the garden enclosed, had a fountain coming out of it. The natural result of her love is that she's going to turn, and together, it's not like she's going to go off by herself and do all this work.
Yes.
Together, they're going to fortify the immature little sister, so the immature little sister is not lost. It's, we're going to take care of her.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I love that.
Yes.
I think that this whole, she's not ready, it's not a problem. We're going to constantly take care of her.
Yes.
Okay, but then when verse 10 comes in, I am a wall.
Yeah.
The bride is saying this. Am I right? So it's like interesting because you're kind of like wondering, is she a wall? Is she a door?
Yeah.
But it's not the little sister who speaks. She does. Little sister never speaks here. It's the bride again. I am a wall.
Yes.
So she knows who she is. And she says, my breasts are like towers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, breasts, we get this imagery. Like, why are we talking about this? But breasts are the place where milk comes from.
Mm-hmm.
It is where nourishment comes from. Okay. So, and these breasts, I guess, represent the love of God and love of neighbor.
Yeah.
So she cannot have one without the other. I mean, I guess you could have one breast. But I mean, just like as they have come in a unit generally throughout this song, it's like love of God and love of neighbor, they just are hand in hand. It's like these are the first two greatest commandments. But if you love your God truly, you will love your neighbor. And if you love your neighbor truly, you will find in them God.
Yeah.
I think.
Yes.
I think that this next reference, I became in his eyes, the bridegroom's eyes, as one who brings peace. This is last time we were talking about how he calls her Shulamite.
Yeah.
Oh, Shulamite, turn, oh woman of peace. The bridegroom is the one who helped her to become a woman of peace, helped her to become strong. So Paul, 1 Corinthians 15 and 10 says, I am unworthy. I'm the most unworthy, but God did this in me. Like, it is not because I am perfect. It's because God in me accomplished this great good. So it's like here she is saying, I am a wall, my breasts are like towers. But that's not because of me, you guys. That's because of my bridegroom,
yeah,
who did all this work for me and in me. And when I cooperated with it, I matured. And now I have breasts, which can nourish others. But my little sister, who is immature, has not yet gone here with the bridegroom. But I want her to.
Yes. Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah. I didn't realize, I didn't put together that he had called her, I forgot she called, he called her the Shulamite. So this is, yeah, like her claiming the identity that he spoke over.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like, I am a woman of peace.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is okay. Awesome.
11 through 12, I actually don't know a ton about. I got a little lost.
Yes.
Okay.
The basic understanding of it is Solomon is talking about the true Solomon, which is Jesus.
Okay.
So it had a vineyard at Baal Hamon. But Baal Hamon translation would be in the possession of many.
Okay. Okay.
So basically Jesus has a vineyard and he has many, many people in his vineyard.
Okay.
As
the workers of the
vineyard? As the workers of the vineyard.
Okay, cool.
And so then she's saying her vineyard is at her own disposal. So she cares for her vineyard and she wants to give all of her fruit back.
Okay, sure.
So it's saying, like, Jesus has a vineyard of many people who are going to be caretakers for the church, yep, the body, the priests, the religious,
yep,
the ministers. And then she's like, I also have my own vineyard, which she has realized. Because in the beginning of Song of Songs, she said, I have not cared for my vineyard.
Right.
And now she says, I do have a vineyard now, and now I can give you all of the fruit.
Wow.
And I can give my fruit to the caretakers, too, because I have an abundance.
Okay, wait, maybe I'm making a jump here, so please tell me if you disagree with this, but this just kind of popped into my mind here that what she says in chapter one specifically is she is sunburnt because she has been working in the field. So she, yeah, has been at work in a vineyard,
yeah,
but she hasn't been at work in her vineyard.
Yes.
And what you were just saying about the ministers, like Jesus has a vineyard, like the church, people working in it.
Yeah.
But if she's working in the ministry of the church without tending her own vineyard, she gets sunburnt. She gets resentful. She gets bitter.
Yes.
That is just like a reflection of my own heart where it's like, I'm doing the work, Lord. But it's like, that's not what it, now she's got this vineyard in her own heart that she, yeah, is tending. And now she has fruit to bear to give to the caretakers in the other garden, the priests, the religious, the missionaries, the ministers.
Yes.
Because she's not like, I have to do this. She's like, I'm choosing to do this. I can't, yeah, help but do this. I love you. Is that,
yeah,
fair?
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's awesome.
Wow.
It's a really good reflection.
I didn't realize that Baal Hamon, like what?
I know.
What a weird word to say. A vineyard of all the... Okay, so he's really just claiming.
But there's many, many people in his vineyard. He's, okay, a vineyard of many.
Which, in one sense, she must be one of them.
Yes.
But, yeah, okay. Okay, 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 okay. Anything else there, or...
No, that was it.
Okay. Then we're almost at the end here.
Yeah.
You who dwell in the gardens. This part is good. Okay, you take the first bite of this, and then,
okay,
I'll jump in.
Yeah, yeah. So the first part is the bridegroom. You who dwell in the gardens, my companions are listening for your voice. Let me hear it. And it's this whole idea of now he's like, okay, you have your vineyard, you have your fruit. Mm-hmm. Go preach the gospel,
yeah,
for my sake. Like, I want to hear you.
Yeah.
I want my companions to hear you. I want the world to hear you.
I want to hear your voice.
Yeah.
Talking about me.
I know. Okay, so end us out.
Okay, yes. So this is crazy. So this is the apostolic bride, right? He has just told her, I want to hear your voice. And now she says something that she has said before, but, mm-hmm, she says it in freedom.
Yes.
Swiftly, my lover, be like a gazelle or a young stag upon the mountain of spices. Mm-hmm. She already has given him permission before to roam and return, but she wasn't quite sure she meant it. Because then she was like, where did he go?
Yes.
But now she's like, I'm good. I can bear the loneliness of your absence because I know you and I know you always come for me. Mm-hmm. And I will speak. You will hear my voice. I will be the apostolic bride at work. I will be tending to the little sister. I will be doing this. And just like a young stag, I guess, as he's leaping along, pauses and kind of looks back over his shoulder, double checks there's no hunters, yeah, or whatever. You can see it in your mind's eye. Like, Jesus, look back at me. Give me little moments of consolation that you're still there. But like, I don't need you to feed me milk anymore. I can eat the steak. Like, I am, yeah, an adult. Like, you know, I have this, I really want to read this quote here, but it might take me just a second to find it. Sorry, if you wanted to say anything. If not, we can just wait. Oh, here it is. Sorry. I can't highlight here, of course. So, okay. Okay, I have this quote. Let me see if I can find it. It is from this, the new translation thing that we were just looking at. It seems as if she were saying to him, "If you want me to go and work for your glory, flee a little from me, my sweet God. Let me free myself from your loving arms so as to hasten to where you yourself call me. Do not keep my faculties so absorbed and captivated that I cannot use them as you wish in your holy service. I want to sacrifice my pleasure for yours and to fulfill your will, not mine, in all things. I no longer take into account the enjoyment of your love, but simply your love itself, which you have placed into souls. Flee, yes, but like the young stags who often turn around and look back, thus, my sweet love, turn and look back so as not to deprive me of your divine gaze, for in it I have placed not only all my strength, but even my life."
That's so beautiful.
She literally, I mean, Francis de Sales says something like this in Introduction to About Life about John the Baptist. She said, out of love of God, he left God. John the Baptist did not become one of the apostles. He probably could have.
Yeah.
But he probably wanted nothing more than to be with Jesus.
Yes.
But he left Jesus to do the work Jesus actually wanted him to do.
Yeah.
And in that absence, he knew he was in the right place, but he didn't feel it. And he didn't feel that ecstasy, but he knew that he was doing the Lord's work. So
wow. I never thought about that. Yeah, if I was John, it is crazy that John was not an apostle.
I mean, he probably could have been, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the Lord didn't ask him, but maybe the Lord did ask him and we never, I mean, maybe they worked it out as 14-year-olds. We don't know. He's like, I got something else for you, John.
Go be beheaded.
Go be beheaded. But anyways, I just love this triumphant note of the bride.
Yes.
That, you know, she's not afraid.
Mm-hmm.
She is, I mean, you just mentioned that Not Afraid is the name of the main character on Hinds Feet and High Places.
Yes, Hinds Feet and Hinds Places. If you want something, if you're like, I'm not ready to be done with Song of Songs, I think the Lord still has stuff for me here. It's a narrative story of Song of Songs, and it's someone, her name's called Much Afraid.
Oh, Much Afraid, not Afraid.
Yeah, Much, she's Much Afraid. I'm not going to completely spoil it, but Much Afraid goes with her shepherd. She leaves the people of like this victim mindset.
Yes.
Of like, okay, I'm going to choose to follow my shepherd because he's going to take me to high places.
Yes.
And she has to go, and the companions he gives her are pain and suffering. I know. And she's like, why did he give me these people? But then at the end of it, like they reveal, like the angels actually reveal their real names, which is like a beautiful thing. And then she gets her new name.
Which I'm like, okay, here at the end, the bride is calling herself a woman of peace.
Yes.
And she's saying she's not afraid. She's like, go, I'm free. I feel good. So it's like her name is Not Afraid.
Her name is Not Afraid.
Okay. Wow. So there we have it. That's a Song of Songs.
Yes.
As we should say, that is the one version of the Song of Songs because there are so many different ways to interpret this book. But yeah, me too. I'm sad it's over.
But it has really, really blessed my prayer life. So
it has changed the way I've prayed. It really, really has. So I'm so grateful, Katie. Thank you for coming along.
Yes, thank you for all your wisdom too.
Yeah, it's fun. Before we wrap up this episode though, we got one last little thing we want to add.
Yes.
Little or not, I guess, but it's Holy Week, and as we kind of said at the beginning of the episode, we just want to talk about Holy Week.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is that it is the week of the bridegroom, is what the early or Eastern Church calls it, which is I think a better name. This is me personally, but just to understand what we're actually celebrating here.
Yes.
It's not like the week to be holy. It's like the week to be in love.
The week to do the holy things and be at church.
Right. Check, check, check. I'm done with that. Now I'm finishing out Lent. But there's this concept. It's not just a concept. It's what the church teaches, that Easter Vigil is like the wedding, and the consummation of the church is symbolized in this one action in the Easter Vigil. It's obviously symbolic here, but when the Easter candle is dipped 3 times into the baptismal font, that is considered to be like the marital act, okay? And it happens at the Easter Vigil. So this idea that Lent has been a betrothal season, a preparation for the bride to be given, it is parallel, a season of preparation for the confirmandi and for the first communicants, for people, catechumens entering the church. And so really for them especially, it's like the night that they become part of the bride. So it's like this whole wedding thing. And trying to bear that in mind as we go to these services this week, and I say services, not masses, because it's true. They're not all masses.
Yes.
And it's not so much about wearing black clothes and looking sober and feeling like dust, because we are dust. To dust we shall return. But it's not so much that. That's not the primary lens. The primary lens is, he did all this to be in communion with me. Is there anything that I am putting in between me and him that I could just sacrifice and get rid of so that I can have union with him. Like, what is holding me back from the Lord? Mm-hmm. And he did all this for your openness, for your yes. The cry of the bridegroom is, mm-hmm. Ephatha, is be opened to me. And are we actually open to him? So, I don't know, just food for thought as you're moving through this week. If your heart says to you, like, shame on you, you're so bad, you did bad this Lent, you didn't even do all your Lenten things, and you're not ready for Easter, like, shush that little voice and say, this is my bridegroom, and he's constantly inviting me to begin again. So mm-hmm. I'm going to go, and I'm going to do my best today. So anyways. Okay, but anyways, turning to the practical, we wanted to start with practical with kids, because that is the lived reality of a lot of our listeners we know. But even if you don't have kids right now, we're going to go to practical realities or other mm-hmm. things too. But Katie, you have three, and you really know you're doing a lot more than me.
I have three.
How do you do this week? How do you have bridegroom intimacy when you've got three little kids you're trying to keep alive?
Three little kids, and you're trying to also invite them into it too.
Right.
So something that we've always done is, well, since having kids, is we have dad wash the feet of everybody.
Oh.
On Holy Thursday.
Wait, that's cool.
Yeah, so I don't think, besides my first, which she was like 3 weeks old, so she definitely went to Holy Thursday Mass, but...
Okay, sure.
But she doesn't remember it. I don't think we've been to a Holy Thursday since.
And it's always at 7:30.
It's at 7:30, which is just not a great time.
Not good.
For kids. So usually we'll have dinner. I try to do something with Lamb.
Oh, cool.
Just... You know, a little liturgical living.
There you go. Love it.
But then after that, Matthew, my husband, will wash all of our feet.
Cool.
And it usually ends now with, like, my oldest wanting to wash feet. So I'm assuming this year it'll be my oldest two that are going to want to go through and wash feet after.
You have a lot of clean feet in the house.
Yeah, but he usually, like, kind of prays over each of us and washes their feet. And it's just, like, a really holy moment.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see it grow as the kids really understand what's happening.
Right.
Another thing is family stations of the cross.
Okay, cool.
Because they're really not that long. Like, they seem really intimidating, but you can make them very simple.
You don't have to do the whole prayer that happens
yes,
in the
you don't have to do the whole prayer.
Yep.
And so we actually have never done it in the church, but if your church is open,
yep.
you can take your kids at any time.
And just do it by yourselves?
And do it by yourselves.
Wow, when do you do that?
On Good Friday.
Yeah. Cool. You don't go to one of the pre-set services of Stations of the Cross. You go by yourself and you do it.
Yeah. Well, beautiful. We haven't gone into a church and do it. We'll just do it in our home.
We do it in our home too. Yeah.
Pull up pictures.
Yes. Cool.
So then the kids can kind of see what's going on. Because that also, it might be hard in a church depending on the age of your
I know,
kids.
They can't even tell what you're looking at. You're they like, might not I'm looking at that.
Yeah. Depending on the stations your church has.
Yes. How small they are.
But either way, it's just a good way for your kids to kind of visualize the passion.
Beautiful.
And then we have been able to make it to the Good Friday services.
Nice.
And the veneration of the cross is really powerful for kids.
Yep.
But if we weren't able to do that, we would probably just do a veneration of the cross at home.
Cool. Beautiful.
Yeah, because we've done that on, I think, Exaltation of the Cross.
Yeah.
We'll usually do a veneration of the cross.
It's so good to know that you can just do it at home.
Yes.
You know, the permission that... You know, these are obviously holy days in the church that we want to do something, but they're not holy days of obligation. We don't have to be in the church with the people doing it. Especially when your church says this is the only time it is, and you're like, okay, I really can't make that happen. It's like, it's okay.
Yeah, and it can create, like, sometimes when you are at home, Holy Thursday, it's like, okay, I know if we're going to a 7:30 Mass, I'm going to be so stressed out.
Yeah, I'm actually not going to enter in.
Everything my kids are flipping out about. It's like, but if we do this little thing at home of washing the feet, I'm able to enter in more intimately with Jesus of like, okay, Jesus, this is what you did for your disciples. And my kids are able to like more fully understand the concept.
Yeah.
But not any way saying that it's not holy, but the Mass of Holy Thursday is so beautiful.
Yes.
And if you can make it. It is amazing.
Of course.
Especially with the veneration after of the adoration.
Altar of repose. Yeah. Yes. Very cool. Really
I
cool.
know. That's something that I do miss. But you had...
But one day you'll get back to it. And
one
then
day I will.
Your kids will be like, wait, the whole church is doing the same thing that we've been doing at home. And you're like, yes.
Yeah.
The domestic church has been preparing you. But now that you're old enough to tape up till 7:30.
I know.
We can all do this together.
That's something with Holy Saturday. Easter Vigil, we have just found babysitters. Well, usually at my parents, so my parents will be be at home with the kids.
That's awesome. So or you can go.
At least my mom. My dad's a music minister, so
oh,
he's there. He's there. But yeah, so we just put them to sleep, and then we're able to get... This Easter Vigil is, like, one of the most beautiful liturgies.
Yeah, it really is.
And to just be able to enter into that without kids at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, because some families do bring their kids, and it is a beautiful witness.
Yes, but I'm like, it is.
It is also a choice.
It's just different.
You don't have to do that.
Yes.
If you don't have to feel guilty about not doing that. And you don't have to feel guilty about if you do that and your kids make a loud noise. That's okay, too.
Yes, that is okay,
welcome
too.
There, you know, but...
If you can find a way to make it to the Easter Vigil... It is really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. The we would always do growing up. So I don't really have very many advices, pieces of advice from my own parenthood because my daughter's too little to know what the heck is happening. And so like we try to go to what we can. But growing up, my mom is just like a whiz at this type of thing. And so on Good Friday from like 12 to 3 we'd do like quiet time in the house and then this is like when you're older kids though, right? So when you have littles, it's like you can't tell them to be quiet. You're like 18 months, you're like shh, like Jesus, we're just dying.
We just I feel like we just don't do music.
Yep, okay,
that's like our main thing.
You can do like no screens, no music during these 3 hours. Music.
But yeah, the talking, you can't really control that.
For sure. And you're like, try to talk about only holy things. No, you can't do that. Like, we're talking about Barney, it's no big deal. Okay, but then we also did the rosary, and then in between each decade, we would watch a little clip from, I don't know what actually movie it was. I should have looked this up. But it, you know, shows the life of Jesus. Mm-hmm. The Stations of the Cross. Sorry. The Sorrowful Mysteries of the Rosary.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would put purple cloths taped all over Jesus around the house. So that everywhere there was Jesus around the house, every crucifix, he was covered. So it's like he's dead.
Yes.
And then on Sunday morning, you get to remove them, which was great fun. And then we had like little Jesuses that we'd draw and put into the tomb. Crucified, but then on the other side you draw a resurrected Jesus, so there's like a craft, you know, so there's different things like that that I remember and have stuck out to me. My mom always ran a Seder meal on Thursday, which was always a big deal. But yeah, I think that one thing, I guess if I had one messaging, it would be like, be patient with your family. And if your kids, you've got these great ideas when your kids are 10 but your kids are 2, just be patient, you know, like you'll get to that and you'll get ideas then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like what your examples too. Okay, just briefly then, because I don't want to get us super long-winded here, but if you don't have kids, or if you do and you're just looking for ways also to creatively engage, you know, maybe this is you, maybe not, but it feels like I do this every single year. I've done this 30 times, you know, like I don't know how to make this feel any different than what it is. A couple things that have helped me. One is this activity we call In the Grave, where on Holy Thursday, Damascus actually taught me this, I think, during a silent retreat, but on Holy Saturday, that weird in-between day where you're like, am I supposed to be dying Easter eggs? Am I supposed to be suffering? Like, I can't tell. to spend a little bit of time identifying things in your family, in yourself, habits, patterns of behavior, sins, even just like non-sin things that you really shouldn't be doing, like leaving your underwear around, whatever, and put those in the grave and say, these things should die with you, Jesus, and give us a resurrection tomorrow, right? So intentional prayer time of like what needs to go in the grave. I know I mentioned this earlier on the pod, but this year for me feels new, like the idea of praying with bridal attire. Yeah. So that it's like what you're wearing. So if you're looking for something to pray with on Good Friday, if you've got an hour to pray, you know, specifically it's like stitching together that bridal dress or the bridal bouquet, or like what are you going to be offering or giving to Jesus, or you know, showing up at the foot of the cross to comfort him in or with, you know, the whole idea of wedding, but also his passion, his suffering. I like a visual, so to visually draw out and then to write in, I like to use my little words to write in. That type of concept has helped me to think about my Lent as a whole instead of like, did I accomplish it? Did I do it right? It's like, did I make a gift for the Lord? Did I love him a little bit more each day? Did I respond to his call, Ephatha? Praying with the 7 readings and Psalms from the Easter Vigil, I think is great because there are a lot. Often the church doesn't read all 7. They read like 3 or 4, but it's cool to see them and not be like, so much information coming at me, but be like, I have read with these and prayed with these every single day. They're kind of going through the story of salvation history and the covenants leading up to Jesus's covenant. So it's pretty cool. I like to do the Abiding Together podcast really advocates for like making mysteries of the rosary in your own life. So like your glorious mysteries, your joyful mysteries. So you can pray with your sorrowful mysteries, and like that Jesus was there with you during your sorrowful mysteries. A nice thing to kind of map out in the same way your stations of the cross. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then maybe last one here, just again, these are just to personalize it, which personalizing it isn't always the point, but sometimes it's really needed to connect with the bridegroom during this week, is taking a little bit of time. Maybe it's doing the stations of the cross of your life or whatever, but taking a little bit of time to write a little bit of your life story, kind of map out your life. And then to what I did this from like, I feel like October to Easter. So this took a long time for me, the 1 year I did it, but it was like, write my life story. And then I, on the Triduum, would read it and ask the Lord, any place that there's wounds or there's lies or there's bad influence or there's sin or there's suffering or there's shame, can you identify it? And that's the thing that's going to go in the grave tomorrow. It felt like a life confession in a sense, but it's not, because a life confession obviously is a sacrament and this is just an exercise in prayer. But in a sense, if you're like, I am trying to follow God, I am Catholic, I am trying to love him, I am doing the Song of Songs, but I feel like I don't know that God loves me, and I feel like I'm not close to him. Like, my recommendation for anybody in that state would be, look at your life and just see where you've been with him, and see where you've suffered, and see that if you can see that where you've suffered, he actually cares. To me, that breaks down this wall that you might have between you and the Lord of like, he doesn't care, he's not here, I don't feel him, I don't hear him. Like, what? Other people get this and I don't. Can you look at your life and can you ask him to show you what you're missing and show you where you guys have been together? And that might be a really good activity exercise type of thing to do over the Triduum. Because I think that more than anything, he wants you to walk away from this Lent not feeling guilty or ashamed or sure or proud of yourself or whatever, but to feel loved by him. So,
wow, that's really beautiful.
Anything to add on that, though?
No, that is awesome.
Okay, yeah, cool. That's the things that we wanted to share.
If you can make it to a Holy Chrism Mass on Tuesday.
On Thursday. Thursday?
No, Tuesday. It's on Tuesdays. In most dioceses, it's on the Tuesday.
Okay, cool.
They bust on the Chrism. Then they bring the Chrism on Thursday to the
Masses. Cool. I knew there was a big Mass. Okay, cool.
Yeah, so on Tuesday, Monday is the Anointing of Bethany.
Yes.
Tuesday is the Chrism Mass. So.
Cool. Wait, that's cool. It is. It's all...
It'll be at your cathedral.
And remember to smell it.
Yes.
Because that's what Jesus smelled like. Actually, it's probably not the same thing. I don't think the chrism oil smells like anything. I don't know.
The nard-nard.
The nard-nard couplet of chapter 4. Okay, well, I think that's what we're going to leave you with then. Enjoy this week as much as you can. I know it's weird to be like, happy, but it really is. It's a joy. Come into the joy of...
Lent ends on Wednesday.
Yeah, by the way.
Or no, it ends right before Holy Thursday Mass.
Yeah, like what, 7 p.m.? 7:30 p.m.
Depending on your church. I'm like, your Lent may end earlier or later.
And then enjoy your Triduum. Yes. And see you next week for a happy Easter.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.